Welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John,
yeah.
I had months to remember that I needed a dad joke for this portion of the show, and I just remembered just now.
You don't need a dad joke, Hank. That actually segs nicely into the conversation
what's
we need
his,
to have
it,
with our listeners.
His, what does it do?
It segs.
Like it's a segue? It segues?
It segs. S-E-G-U-E-S. Segs nicely into the conversation we need to have.
S-E-G-G-S, which is a different thing.
Okay. What we are segueing our way into, Hank, to be grammatically incorrect, to apparently please your needs, is that we need to have a talk with our listeners about the future of this podcast. So, Hank, you had cancer.
Yeah, I mean, the past tense is kind of messy, but okay.
Well, right, fair enough. You are in currently diagnosed as in remission from cancer.
Yeah.
And verb tenses are weird, period. But this has led, the whole cancer thing, I think it's safe to say, has led to, I don't want to say a midlife crisis, but a...
Hopefully. We're hoping.
That's exactly the kind of thing that is supposed to be something I say, not something you say.
And this, yeah, and yet we've ended up in this universe.
Exactly. Instead. This weird role reversal where suddenly you're the one obsessed with mortality is strange and surreal and part of a larger phenomenon where we have both, I think it's safe to say, kind of rethought our relationship with being alive over the last 6 months, the same 6 months we haven't been making this podcast.
Yeah. John, and how do you get an elephant on a Segway?
Oh, geez. Through like the encouragement.
Personal, the person, no, you take the S out of seg, and then you take the F out of way.
There's no F. Oh, like you get the F out of the way?
No, you were so close, you almost did it. Oh, it's really frustrating for me, John.
I don't...
You take the F out of way.
There is no F in way.
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, God.
Ah.
Okay, when you require audience participation for a dad joke to work, you should never expect it to work. But my point is that we don't even need dad jokes because we're changing the fundamental nature of this podcast to be more in line with the fundamental nature of who we are now after this experience.
I mean, I just made the noise. So I don't know how significantly we've changed. But okay.
I
agree. We should take a step back and we should look at it from 30,000 feet. We should take the opportunity to imagine.
And in fact,
we've
already done that. And we just need to tell the people about that.
I may have forgotten about that conversation.
So we're remaking the podcast, Hank. We are reinventing Dear Hank and John, not quite from scratch, but almost from scratch to reflect this new reality that we live in. What is the first thing that we're doing?
The first thing that we're doing, John, is that we're committed. We're making a commitment to each other that we're going to record for an hour instead of for like two and a half hours.
Yeah, we're not going to record for 2.5 hours. First off, we're just not going to do that because we want this to be more of an authentic experience anyway. Like that's part of what I've come away from it thinking is that like what people really value about Dear Hank and John is not actually our high quality comedy bits.
Right.
And that surprised me because they are such high quality. What people value is the conversation between two brothers who love each other a lot.
Right.
And that's what we're going to provide.
Yeah. And like, well, we're going to let what happens during that hour. But if it results in a 30-minute long episode of Dear Hank and John, that's great. And we're happy with that. We're not thinking, boy, we're really letting people down, or boy, I'm not happy with how that turned out because there's not enough usable stuff in that episode. We're thinking, dope. We recorded for 45 minutes and the episode's 44 minutes long.
Or we recorded for an hour and the episode's an hour long and it's a no-cut special. But the main thing is that, and this goes nicely into point two, which is that we are not going to think of Dear Hank and John as work. And indeed, it's not work in the sense that we don't get paid for it. So.
Right. And like, this is just like a thing that happens, you know, like at first it's like, oh, let's just do the goofs. And then it starts to be, oh, well, the goofs are going so well that like we should make sure that in addition to the goofs, there's ad placements and then there's people relying on things to happen. And then it's.
And we're still going to have ads.
Stressing. Yeah. Yeah. But like,
none of that money goes to Hank and me. It goes to Complexly, which I guess is a company that indirectly does pay both Hank and me something. But like, it's not, you know,
we're not reliant on that money to pay us our salaries. It's not like a direct through to from one to the other.
Yeah, exactly.
And but also to some extent, like, you know, once something becomes a thing where people. You know, internally at Complexly, like there's infrastructure for like sending us the ad placements and making sure that the thing gets. And so like we have to be respectful of the needs of the people who like can't do their jobs if we don't do the things at the right times. So that makes it more of a job. And we're still going to be doing that. Like if Kelsey needs us to do an ad read and needs it by Wednesday, she's going to have it by Wednesday.
We're going to do it by Wednesday.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
But but during this part, I'm not going to think about any of that. That's not.
I just want to have fun with my brother.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I want to have fun with my brother, and I'm not going to think about that stuff.
Which was what we've been doing. But like, there has been some extra pressure.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we're like, how do we make this thing really good? Or like, how do we market it better? And look, here's how we're going to market it better. If you listening want to tell people about Dear Hank and John, you can. That's 100% of the marketing we're going to do.
Yeah.
Please do things. If you want to clip us and put it on TikTok and do lip syncs, I might do a lip sync of my own voice.
Right. Sure. Of course.
And then I'll do John's voice, but I'll have a filter on that makes my mouth really small.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah.
And and by the way, if you don't want to tell people you know about this podcast because you're embarrassed that you listen to it, that's also fine. That's okay. Uh-huh. And I certainly don't want you to tell people about the podcast who aren't cool, because one of the great things about this podcast is that everybody who listens to it, I like. And I don't want you to tell people who I'm not going to like about the podcast. Please don't, because that's the new vibe. The new vibe is we're not trying to get a million downloads a month. We're trying to make sure that people who suck don't listen to this podcast. There's so many podcasts for them, Hank, because this is the hour a week where we're just brothers hanging out and talking to each other with people we adore.
Yeah. Woo.
All right. The third thing that's changing, and this is going to be a bummer for some of you.
Yes.
Is that we're no longer doing the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. Just kidding. It's actually going to be mostly news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon this week. There's a lot to catch up on. So much has happened on Mars in the last 6 months. Holy crap.
Oh my God, I'm not going to do it justice.
And indeed, I can't do AFC Wimbledon's endless drama justice. But we are not going to do This Week in Stuff, our hit Patreon-only podcast, any longer.
Yeah.
Basically, we're scaling back the Patreon. The thing about the Patreon that we think brings the most value and that we really love is doing these monthly live streams with our listeners. That's the thing that we really love and think is super valuable, and we're going to continue to do that. We're not going to do this 5-minute silly podcast every week, because we're focusing on each other and doing stuff together that we hope will be fun for everybody.
Yeah, it was kind of first of all, you don't get a lot of feedback with any podcast. You know, a YouTube video, you get immediate, within the 4 minutes of it being uploaded, somebody's watched the whole thing and they're leaving a comment. With so much of what we do, that is the way that it works. We get feedback for Dear Hank and John in the form of questions and interactions. We know people are out there. This Week in Stuff has always felt a little bit like shouting into the void.
Yeah.
I know that it's not. I know that there are people who are listening to it and are enjoying it. And those old episodes will stay up. If you become a patron, you'll get access to the old episodes. But also, we finish the podcast. This is what happens. We finish the podcast and we do our little outro, and then we stop for like 5 seconds, and then we start This Week in Stuff. And it's like, I don't know. The arc, it makes it feel like work again.
It ruins the arc. Yeah. It ruins the vibe. And this is what it's all about now, is holding on to that arc.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about these changes, even though I know that it's going to be a bummer for some people. But and the other thing is that we're probably not going to be every week anymore, because we're going to be when we can do it.
Yeah, we've had a little bit of trouble because our schedules changed during the hiatus. We've just like had a hard time finding the right time to record.
I would argue that my schedule changed during the hiatus. Your schedule evaporated.
Yeah. But we collectively.
Oh, okay.
Not going to put it on any one person.
Sure. Yeah. Once again, I'm trying to present myself as the protagonist of your cancer journey, Hank. And I feel like
not to put it all on you.
Not enough people have bought into this narrative. And it's really frustrating for me that the main person who was shaped by Hank's cancer was John.
I mean, it didn't have no effect.
Right. But but again, I feel like a lot of people have put you at the center. Hank's cancer. Hank's survivorship. Hank's cancer journey.
Mm-hmm.
Where's John's Hank's cancer?
Yeah, I think I really should have renamed it to like Johnkin's lymphoma.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer to think of it as John and Hank try lymphoma.
You know, that was actually on the table, that the Try Guys would come to Missoula and we'd do a Try Guys Try Chemotherapy, but I'd be like an honorary Try Guy for a day.
Aww.
And they come in and we do chemotherapy and see what that would be like.
I love that.
It did not work out because, as it turns out, getting chemotherapy
sucks.
Is really exhausting and sucks. And as they told me how it would work, I was like, no way.
Right.
You coming to do this? Like, I'm going to be in my backyard sleeping during when you would like me to be doing things aside from that.
Yeah.
But it was a great idea. It would have been really cool.
It's a great idea. But man, chemo knocks you out. It was a real, among the things that have been weird for me was seeing Hank take a nap. Like, Hank didn't even take naps when he was two.
I have took so many naps.
Yeah.
The only times I take naps are when I have am actively undergoing cancer treatment and when I'm on a boat.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I have seen you take a lot of boat naps, but they aren't
the same reason.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm going to hurl.
Yeah. The boat naps never felt to me like naps, more like, and I guess it's true with the chemo naps too. It's more like an enforced sleep.
Yeah.
You know?
Seeing
Hank on a boat is actually pretty similar to seeing you on chemo. Like, you're not all there emotionally or like intellectually. You know, like there's a lot of you that's just kind of like in a little bit of a state of misery.
Yeah. The last time I was on a boat was wild because I went on this whale watching trip with Catherine.
Yeah.
And it was a surprise. And she was like, "You really want to do this?" And I'm like, "Let's go."
No.
But it was a surprise. So neither of us were dressed well for it because Catherine would have made sure I was dressed well if she had known about it.
Sure.
And she herself also would have dressed better for the occasion. So we were both very cold. On the way out, everything's fine. On the way back, I had to go like sit in the back of the boat. But then one of the crew was like, "You're Hank Green."
Oh, no.
And talking to me for a long time when I'm clearly in the back of the boat for a reason.
Yeah. No, when I'm on a boat, the only question is it going off the side or off the back?
Yeah. I'm not a boat man.
No, which is a blessing, you know?
Like, I don't know. It seems like some of the boat people have great lives.
I like
they're having a good old time.
I like enough expensive stuff without getting into boats. You know what I mean?
There's cheap ways.
Yeah.
There's cheap ways.
Well, I mean, I have
the boats, but I hear what you're saying.
I have a kayak.
Yeah.
Boats, like, I'm good. I'm covered. I enjoy kayaking on the White River, and I never feel seasick when I'm kayaking on the White River for whatever reason. But you put me on a proper boat with an engine, I do not have a good time.
Yeah.
There is no way to get from the Freetown International Airport to Freetown in Sierra Leone without going on a boat. And I know what you're wondering. That doesn't make any sense. Well, it makes sense if you were a colonial enterprise founding an airport that you want to be separate from the people.
Yeah.
And so this is where it was set up and now where it still is all these decades later. And so you have to go on a boat. And I'll tell you, getting off like a 30-hour airplane trip and getting on a boat is not my most glorious moment in terms of likelihood that I'm going to vomit.
Well, John, if you do want to get into boats, I have good news for you. I just saw this article that went viral on Twitter. The headline is "Turning the Tide: The Sustainable Future of Super Yachts."
Well, I mean, a couple observations. I'm actually not as concerned about the sustainable future of super yachts as I am concerned about the fact that you're still on Twitter.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I will say that whatever they're doing over there at Twitter.com, it is making it less compelling to me. Like, I am not drawn in anymore.
I still see you tweet quite a bit, I have to say. And that implies, of course, that I'm on Twitter.
How do you see him, John?
I see him the old-fashioned way, Hank, on Twitter, which is a problem. But I think the difference between us is that I accept that there's something horrifically wrong with me. I accept that this is a terrible, terrible personal failure.
You're right. Because I really do think that, like, I look back at the last 10 years of my life and I'm like, you know, the amount of time I spent on Twitter, probably appropriate.
Wow. Are you serious?
Yeah, I had that thought this morning.
Holy, I mean, that is astonishing.
At least I don't regret it, is the feeling I have.
I regret it. 100% regret it. I regret Twitter.
No, yeah.
I regret like everything I've invested into Twitter, emotionally, the power that I've given over to the platform. I regret all of it. Now, I will say, like, great things have been done through and by Twitter. I don't want to take anything away from that, including like one of the things that happened while we quit the podcast was that our community had several hundred millions of dollars of impact in reducing the price of the cost of tuberculosis diagnostics and treatments. And some of that might not have happened without Twitter.
And I think that Twitter mattered in that. It's weird how people feel like what happens on Twitter matters in a bigger way than things that happen on other social media platforms.
It feels
and I don't have my finger on why it feels that way. It feels that way to me too. But it also feels that way to other folks. And so that, I was frankly, I haven't said this publicly, but kind of astounded at the level of sensitivity to the signal that those people and organizations had. It felt pretty empowering and very, I also maybe haven't, I have said this publicly, but like, I am amazed by the work that we got done during those efforts. And I am also like extremely proud of you because I know what went into that, both in terms of like educating yourself and behind the scenes work. It's like legitimately astounding.
Thanks.
Like, I'm astounded.
Yeah, no, I it's definitely the weirdest thing that's ever happened to me, and some weird things have happened to me. Thank you, Hank. As I've said a million times, but it's very true, like, none of this happened in a vacuum. And if it weren't for Partners in Health and Doctors Without Borders and the Treatment Action Group and thousands of nerd fighters who've now organized themselves as TB fighters, then none of that would have happened. So it's not by any means a story primarily about me, but I am really glad to be part of it. And looking forward, there are so many other ways that we need to improve access to TB treatment. So the work is by no means done.
So those are, I think, the main things that are changing about the podcast.
Yep.
I do not know to what, like, I've done a little bit of talking behind the scenes with people, and I know that folks are not enthusiastic about losing this week and stuff. But I don't know how big of a deal that is to folks. But I do agree that for us anyway, like, the by far the most valuable and rewarding Patreon thing has been the monthly live streams. And we'll keep doing that. And so many people show up for those.
Yeah.
And it's just a good old time.
It's just great. So to summarize, as of today, Dear Hank and John will be shorter and worse.
It'll be more authentic, at least. I do
shorter,
weirdly enough,
and worse.
Have a question that I found that I do want to ask you from our listeners. Do you want to do one listener question today?
Absolutely. I'll do 16. I'm here for an hour. You have my full attention.
Okay. This is from Duncan, who the subject caught my eye. It says, I want to destroy a thatched roof in a wind tunnel. And I'm like, yeah, you do.
Yeah, of course.
Hi there. Duncan says, I'm one of the only roof thatchers in the United States. I've been doing a job in coastal Georgia for the past month, and I've been wondering what the wind speed required to tear apart a thatched roof is. I've heard that they'll hold up better than other materials, but I only have anecdotal evidence for that. One of our roofs in Denville, New Jersey, held up pretty well to Hurricane Sandy, better than any of the other shingled roofs around it. Another roof that we're rethatching right now on Cape Cod was fine during a bomb cyclone that washed boats up on shore and flipped boards over our scaffold. The question has been eating me alive. I can't stop thinking about it. Willing to answer any questions you might have about roof thatching. And I'm also willing to thatch a small roof free of charge if you can help me destroy it.
Oh, I thought it was, I actually am in need of a roof. And so for a second, I was really excited. I was like, yeah, I don't care what the material is. If they'll do it for free,
like,
I'm in.
I mean, it sounds like Duncan goes all over the place.
Yeah.
So
yeah, Indianapolis needs a stronger thatched roof community anyway.
Yeah.
The first thing this makes me think, Hank,
yeah,
is it possible that we've had the story of the three little pigs wrong all along?
Right.
That in fact, because what are the three little pigs? There's the one that's got the
thatch
hut.
Straw, wood,
straw.
And
that's
brick.
That's basically thatch. Straw, wood, and brick. I think the person with the straw, at least roof, might have been better off.
We got it. Duncan, I want you to build a whole house of thatch, like just big enough to fit a little piggy in.
Yes.
And then we're going to get a wolf.
No.
Who can blow really hard.
Well.
A leaf blower.
Yeah, I actually don't think we need the wolf. I think we can have a non-mammalian source of wind. If you will. I think actually Duncan proposes that with the wind tunnel or a leaf blower might work. A really high powered leaf blower.
Just a bunch of leaf blowers, yeah.
Ooh, what is the most legally powerful leaf blower you can acquire or make? Maybe we could talk to our old friend Mark about
that. That was my first thought too. I was like, Mark Rover knows the limitations of a leaf blower already in his head.
This is a great Mark Rober video.
It
Forget
is.
About us.
Oh my God, Mark.
a real test of the three little piggies is the best Mark Rober video we've ever come up with.
Oh yeah. Yeah, because first of all, you got to hire Duncan to build a straw house. You got to hire somebody else to do a wood house. And then you have to hire a different bricklayer to do a brick house. But then you have to figure out how to create the wind. That's the real hard part.
Yeah, I agree. And do you have it just be wind coming in from one direction, or do you have it sort of a circular wind?
Right.
Like, they might have different results. I have no idea the answer to this question, but that's not going to stop me from speculating.
Well, I know how to blow the most air, easily anyway.
Great. How do you blow the most air?
You get a jet engine.
Okay.
I went to a monster
truck show.
You want
to talk about something that actually costs more than boats.
Yeah, you rent it though. You don't have to buy it outright. I went to a monster truck show.
Yeah.
And at the monster truck show, there was an ambulance. And I was like, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But then the ambulance came out onto the monster truck area. And instead of inside paramedics, there was an extremely inefficient jet engine shot not only a lot of wind, but fire. And they placed a late model sedan behind the ambulance and they turned it into a problem, just like a hazardous waste problem that I personally was like, that seems like it shouldn't be allowed, but I guess it is. Because
I just smelled wafting, burning plastic throughout
and
the
so
arena.
And so could everyone in town. Like
right.
It was not,
yeah.
It was a problem. But that guy who owns that ambulance, I imagine it's not too, like, the monster truck show could afford him. Mark Rober could definitely afford him.
Can he make wind without making fire? Because that will be an issue for the straw house.
I bet they had to modify the engine to make fire. They just have to undo whatever they did.
Okay.
Or just not put, I don't know. I don't know how it works.
I don't either. But Mark Rober would.
Yeah, absolutely.
The
Mark,
Even
I know a guy with an ambulance full of jet engine. I wouldn't say I know someone who knows him.
But you think you could get in touch with him. I love the idea of cold emailing the guy who has the ambulance jet and saying, listen, I'm a YouTuber, but I'm an educational YouTuber. I'm not trying to I'm not trying to sell out here, okay? I'm trying to get you to do science with me.
I just want wind. I don't want to explode something.
I have a strong suspicion that the Woodhouse would actually come in third. Yeah. I still think the Straw House would come in second because I don't think wood roofs are that good. Like, that's actually why I need a new roof, is because I got this cedar shingle roof and I don't think it's that good. Now, it is old, but I think a stiff wind would definitely blow it off.
Yeah. And, yeah. So the question is, should it be whole house or just roof?
You know something I've been thinking about ever since I first read it? This is off topic.
Yeah.
But I think about this all the time. In medieval France, okay? Mm-hmm. When, I don't know if this is true, but I read it in a book about medieval France. When your neighbors would want to come talk to you, they would just lift up your roof.
Really?
And they'd be like, hey, how's it going? What's going on in here?
I feel like you don't know what I'm doing in here right now.
What are you up to today? Well, that was a different time in terms of privacy expectations, Hank. Your roof could be lifted up at any time by any of your neighbors.
I guess you just
know that. And they could just be like, hey, what's up, man? You guys coming to the church later? The only entertainment in town?
That we do? You got a Punch and Judy show?
Unless there's like a traveling theater troupe in town, or like the apothecary with his cart has come for a visit.
Yeah.
Other than that, you're just going, So I don't know. It was a different time. But yeah, imagine that. Just like somebody lifting up your roof and being like, hey, what's up? You want to go to the fields?
I have a door, is what I would say.
I don't know that the door was that door. I don't know. Again,
like, I didn't get out of the house by like going through the roof. I think the door did a thing.
That's true. There had to have been a door, right? So, like, but why is this image so firmly implanted in my head? I'm sure I read it in this book about medieval France, but maybe, who knows? At any rate, the other advantage of a thatch roof, of course, is that your neighbors can just, I don't know how it works, but I assume they can just pick up the roof and say hello.
Yeah, well, I'm curious how the roof is actually attached to the building, but I'm sure Duncan could figure that out. And so you sort of like say to each of the artisans, you say, make this thing as good as you can.
Right.
Make the best possible, strongest straw house you can, but you can't use anything but straw.
Right.
You know?
Now, are we talking about the house or just the roof? Because
I think if it's a Mark Rober video, it should be the whole house. If we're trying to answer Duncan's question and we're just getting the ambulance with the jet engine pointing it at his thatched roof that he's making, then I think it could just be the roof. Because that's the question he's trying to
answer. Can you use mud? You can, right? Because you have to, because like you're not just using bricks, you're also using mortar, you're not just using... You might just be using wood, but I think you can. I think in the straw house, it's going to be a mix of straw and some kind of material that strengthens it, which could be mud or clay.
I'm looking at Duncan's houses here. If anybody wants to check it out, I'm sure that he wouldn't mind. It's at thatching.com.
Well,
so it's not like he's hiding his.
Wow, yeah. he really got the good website. Yeah. Jeez.
And I'm looking at it. I don't see any mud, but I do see what appears to be an extraordinarily sturdy-looking roof.
Ooh, wow. These are pretty, pretty beautiful. Wow. Jeez Louise, that is not what I was expecting.
Yeah, me either.
Okay. Well, this roof is not what I was anticipating. These roofs are going to be fine no matter what. Are you kidding? They look like they could stand up to... I don't know if you can make a house out of that material.
I bet Duncan could figure it out. I also think that if you pointed a jet engine at it, it would be fine unless that jet engine was shooting fire, in which case it would not be. So we'd have to be really sure with the guy with the ambulance that he could turn the fire off.
So your argument is that the three little piggies wouldn't have died from any of those three blowings. Because
unless it was a fire-breathing wolf.
Unless it was a fire-breathing wolf. Because in every occasion, no matter how much wind you, but no, there is a point at which if the wolf can blow at 200 miles an hour, that could be an issue. I'm saying, which is it?
I think 200, I bet 200, this house that I'm looking at right now that Duncan thatched would be fine. I bet at 500, it would not be.
Yeah. Well, first off, I don't want to be in a situation where there's 500 mile an hour wind, period. Hard stop.
No,
seems like Jupiter stuff.
Yeah, that's like if the Earth stopped spinning suddenly, that's what you'd be dealing with.
Can that happen?
No, luckily.
Are you sure?
Yep.
Is it spinning right now?
It's going. Woo, woo, woo.
I just felt it. I feel it now. I'm conscious of it. Oh, boy. We are in space. Oh, God. Most planets in our galaxy rogue planets. Most planets in our galaxy don't have suns to orbit at all. They're just rocks hurtling through space.
Boy, gravity, good thing.
I can feel it.
You ever wake up and you're like, God, did they turn it up a little bit? Did they turn gravity up? Because this feels like a lot.
Do you feel it right now, though, Hank? We are orbiting a star.
Spinning through space. Oh, yeah, total vertigo.
We are hurtling.
Yeah.
Ooh.
We're gonna feel that real good when we see that eclipse that's coming up.
The Indianapolis is in the eclipse zone.
I know, I'm gonna be there.
Oh, great, you wanna go to Rax?
Yeah, for the eclipse. Where are you going to be for the eclipse? The Rax.
I love the idea of calling up Rax and being like, hey, can we use your roof?
I want to be on the Rax roof for the eclipse.
We thought a lot about it.
Look, here's the situation.
We read Annie Dillard's essay about the total eclipse and watching it go up the hillside, and we thought to ourselves, mm-hmm. What if we could watch it go up the racks?
And they're like, no. And I'm like, there's a price for everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like, fine then.
Everything has a price.
We'll buy your racks. That's our racks now. And it's
our
roof.
Racks now. And then I'll sell it back to you the next day because I desperately don't want to own a rack.
One of my biggest life ambitions. Hey, we're making the podcast a little bit worse and a little bit shorter, but also we are buying a racks. And we're going to pour all of our energies into running it, just like our secret brother Dave in that Wendy's.
Oh, I wonder if any of the racks are inside of the eclipse zone.
Oh. That's a great question. In fact, it's such a great question that I'm gonna look it up.
You are gonna look.
It only has a 115 mile wide path of totality.
I know, and it happens to go over your house.
It does go over my house, and it goes over Dayton, Ohio, where the Rax is.
Does it?
Yep.
I don't know, man.
I don't know that it goes over my house so much as it goes like 30 miles south of my house.
Yeah, we might have to go somewhere.
Like Rax.
The Rax Clips.
It's even got a name. We could...
I'm looking.
Yeah.
It goes right over your... No, it goes right over your house.
Okay.
I think.
I don't know. I think Bloomington, Indiana is pretty far south of me, and it's on the north side of the 115 miles.
No, I mean, from the map I'm looking at right now, Indianapolis is literally in the thing.
Okay. All right. Well, then maybe you're right.
But I'm looking for Dayton, and I don't know where it is. Oh, yeah. It is also, Dayton is also in the path.
Yeah. I think we can think about it.
Yeah.
I might rather be at my house, if I'm being honest, but we can go to Rax the day before and eat leftover Rax while watching the eclipse.
Wild, yeah. Cold Rax.
Oh, nothing better.
Under the... Cold Rax and a warm Dr. Pepper under the path of the total solar eclipse.
Yeah, I mean, I might go for a warm beer. Cold Rax and warm beer. Never tried.
God, I hope it's not cloudy. How often is it cloudy in Indianapolis in April?
A lot, I would say. 40% of the time. But then if it is cloudy, we'll just get in the car and go to Rax.
Because Dayton, I'm sure, always has better weather.
Well, it's not even that. If we can't see the eclipse, at least we can see Rax during the eclipse. And we can look up eclipse.
It'll just get dark at Rax in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. A Rax darkness approaches.
Yeah, all the people at the racks would be like, "What did you guys do?"
The only thing is that now that we've revealed our secret strategy, it's possible that there's going to be a large Nerdfighter gathering at the racks outside of Dayton, Ohio, during the eclipse.
Anybody can get to the racks.
Oh, Hank, a lot of people can get to the racks. Are you kidding?
Well, yeah.
You don't think we have any fans near Dayton?
That's a good point. There is a whole there are people who live in Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of the reasons why they put a racks there.
Actually the main reason. One thing about racks is they didn't put them in non-populated areas. Like,
yeah,
they were at least that smart. By the way, racks is a roast beef restaurant that from the 1980s that only has three remaining locations that Hank and I are obsessed with but somehow have never visited, even though we've had plentiful opportunities to.
Yeah, we had a whole plan, but it got interrupted.
It got interrupted by cancer, like so much else in the last year.
So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. But one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank. One thing about me is that I'm mortal, like I'm an organism, which is weird on its own. Like I'm a collection of literal atoms that decided to hang out together for a while and which will eventually be unable to hang out together any longer. And then I will, this is the weirdest part, cease to be. And there's nothing that can be done about that because, like, planets and stars also cease to be. It's a real conundrum, and I'm not going to find my way through it in this advertisement. But we can make life less terrible for those who survive us, and that's why there's life insurance. I have life insurance because the people who are counting on me will be supported after my atoms can no longer hold it together, and Policy Genius is here to make life insurance easier. Policy Genius isn't an insurance company, it's a marketplace where buying insurance is straightforward and affordable. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams, so check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
But that reminds me, Hank, that it's time to transition to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. And I know that we have 15 minutes left, but there's a lot of news from AFC Wimbledon.
It's been a weird year.
I've missed telling you the news from AFC Wimbledon so, so much. It feels like all of my AFC Wimbledon passion in some ways like just goes into a vacuum because I can't tell you about it. I've already been to two games this season. I took my children to Mansfield, which is in the middle of England.
Yep.
And it was like 3 hours and 12 minutes of train rides, four different trains to get to Mansfield. And then a long walk, at least according to my daughter, on a highway. to get to the Mansfield FC Stadium, which is the oldest continually used football stadium in existence. And I'd never been to an away game before, and it was an awesome, awesome experience because it's so much louder. Like, the away fans sing the entire game. They never stop. They're very loud. As Alice said to me, they're loud and they seem drunk. And I was like, well,
that's probably right.
First off, Alice, no vibe checks.
No vibe check on Saturdays.
That was a 0-0 draw. I took my kids all the way to England and then I made them get on trains for 6 hours and 24 minutes in one day to see a thrilling 0-0 draw against Mansfield. But we're pretty good this year.
All right.
We're good. We're not great, but we are much better than I expected us to be, and pretty, even more surprisingly, pretty fun to watch. We play with a real identity, like rigid and hardcore at the back, but also at the same time, pretty good.
Yeah. So, well, for a second there, you were in like second place.
We had one game where we were in second. We're now in eighth, which is just outside the playoff spots. But you know what? Everybody's like, oh, where are we going to finish? Are we going to finish in seventh? I'm like, guys, I don't care. All I care about is that we're 11 points clear of relegation after 13 games. Like, that's amazing. We had one game last season where we didn't have to stress out about being relegated. I would just love this season to have 5 such games or 10 such games. The whole goal is to get to 52 points because you get 3 points for a win, 1 point for a draw. And if we get to 52 points this season, we won't get relegated. We have 21 points after 13 games. This is phenomenal. I'd love to be in a situation. Let's just keep getting points. Let's not worry about where we're going to finish this season. I know what you're wondering, Hank. Who's good? Who do we sign? Who are all the wonderful new players for AFC Wimbledon? Well, most importantly, we held on to 22-year-old Ali Alhamidi, our Liverpudlian Iraqi superstar, who could have gone to a higher league, but chose to stay with us for at least half of this season, hopefully the whole season. Ali Alhamidi continues to be amazing, but we also signed this new guy named James Tilly, classic big bottom small. Not the tallest man you'll ever meet, but big bottom. 5'9". You know what I mean? If you catch my drift.
Yeah.
He plays out on the wing, 5'9", and he is good. He scored 7 goals in his first 9 games for us. We've also got this 18-year-old kid, Aaron Sasu, who's played for us since he was 10, and he's starting to get some game time. He's big and lanky, classic small bottom big. Really like the combination of James Tilly and Aaron Sasu, how they balance each other out. And we've got Jake Reeves. Now, you might remember distantly in the past, Hank, Jake Reeves, because he used to play for us like 7 or 8 years ago. Then he went up to a higher league. Now he's back with Wimbledon. He's right in the middle of our midfield. He's our central midfielder and our captain, and I love him. I love him so much. He inspires so much confidence. I love the way he kind of like yells at the younger players to like get them, you know, focused, get them in, get them drawn in. He's really good. And then at the back, this is the most important thing, Hank. This is what I've been waiting for 6 months to tell you. We've got this central defender. Now, you know that they wear DFTBA on the back of their shorts in the liminal space between left thigh and buttock. We've got this central defender named Joe Lewis who rolls his shorts up like a, like a diaper or like a Speedo. Okay?
Yeah, gets it high so he can have lots of leg flexibility.
I think his argument is like, my thighs cannot be contained by these shorts. It's too uncomfortable.
Yeah, I just have too much thigh.
Which he has a lot of thigh. Let's just say it. Okay, he's thightastic. He's
Joe Lewis, AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah, there's a shot of him after he scored a goal for us off a corner kick, where you really can see the thighs. I don't know if you're looking at that shot, but that's the one.
I'm seeing a lot of thigh. That's for sure.
So much thigh. More than seems possible.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's tan all the way up too. So he obviously does this all the time.
Oh yeah. No, it's not just during game time. He trains like that. I assume he walks around London like that. And you can't even see our logo. He rolls up his shorts so high. He is probably our best player.
All right, Joe.
He's incredible. He's on loan. We haven't even signed him, but I am willing. I'm gonna text you this picture. I am willing to crowdfund for this man. That's how much I love him. I'll crowdfund for him. I'll do what I need to do to make sure that we keep him. And I know we got to cure tuberculosis and deal with maternal mortality and the football is not important, but I love this man. Look at that picture I just texted you, Hank. Look at those thighs under the lights at Plough Lane.
Wow.
Now you see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, wow. He's a whole statue.
We'll put that on the Patreon. Forget about this week in stuff.
This week in thigh.
You're gonna get everything you need. So we're good. We're in eighth place. We're winning some games. We actually have like one of the best defensive records in League Two, and with a very small budget, we are overperforming. And that's largely thanks to our head of recruitment and our head of like football magic, this guy named Craig Cope, who's like a classic Moneyball. He looks kind of like us, you know, which is to say he does
but
not.
But better at math.
He looks like he never played professional football, just like us.
Yeah.
But man, he's magic. He's magic. I'm in love with him too. I'm in love with the team this season. And I got to say, I wasn't a huge believer that we should necessarily bring back our manager, Johnny Jackson. But Johnny Jackson's been great this season. So it's all good. It's all golden. I'm so excited for this AFC Wimbledon team. I have to tell you, if you live in London or Mansfield, you got to go see them. They're just so fun to watch right now.
This is exciting. I'm glad that you got to watch it. Was it like a 0-0 game that you ended up watching?
Yeah. And then the one before that, I went to see Wrexham earlier this season, and that was a 1-1 draw. So haven't seen a victory in a number of years, but neither have a lot of Wimbledon fans.
You'll keep going for it.
That's right.
Eventually you'll just move to London, John, and then...
It'd be really bad for my marriage, but it'd be great for my football watching.
Oh, God. I want to go to London at least for a little bit.
I do.
Sometime soon.
I want you to go to...
I love it there.
You've never been to an AFC Wimbledon game with me.
It's true.
Oh, you got to go. It's so fun. I've never taken anyone who said anything other than that was so fun, except for Alice when I made her go to Mansfield. But other than that, everyone's had a good time.
Well, in Mars news, the biggest, probably at least recent Mars news is that there's this plan to return samples to Earth from Mars.
Yeah.
And this is hard.
We've done
this with asteroids before successfully. One of the great things about asteroids is that they don't have very much gravity well, so you can just get the stuff and leave without burning a lot of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Much harder with Mars, much bigger object, much more gravity. So you have to go down and that's expensive. You have to come back up and that's expensive. Then you have to go back down to Earth and all that's expensive. Just lots of fuel necessary to make this happen. But this is what, like, we've been hoping we'll figure out a way to do it. And in fact, Curiosity is sort of bagging up or vialing up little samples in vials and leaving them like a trail behind him, like little breadcrumbs.
Oh, and, with the expectation that maybe someday we'll be able to get those vials.
Yeah.
That's
which
lovely.
I'm like, if we could come, we don't need to get the vials. We could pack up the own vials, but maybe. Who knows?
It's still a beautiful idea that Curiosity's just like leaving a little bit of breadcrumbs, being like, hey, anybody want to come?
If you guys want this, they're here.
I'm a little lonely.
I do have my little helicopter friend.
That's true.
The idea is that you could have a helicopter come and pick them up and then deliver them back to whatever the sample return thing is. Oh, speaking of which, Ingenuity did... One of the things that happened is that Ingenuity, I think that it did like its, I don't know, 80th flight or something.
It's still helicoptering.
It just keeps flying around.
It's still helicoptering.
It's at it. 59th. It just did its 59th flight, and it also set its altitude record, so it has gone higher than ever.
I like the idea that as it gets older and they've further past its expected mission life, they just take more risks. And they're all right, you know what we're going to do?
Let's see what this thing can handle.
Do you think it can make it to the sun?
Let's just get it. Oh,
can we fly it all the way home?
Just like, that's not how molecules work, unfortunately, but it would be cool if we could make that happen.
That's a good point. Good point about air. Thanks for that. Thanks for that reminder.
So the sample return mission is this sort of pie in the sky thing. And NASA... did an independent review. So the independent review board looked at the sample return plans and they were like, I don't think this is going to work, you guys. That's basically what it said. So they've been working towards this mission for a long time. It would launch in 2028. It'd have a budget of $4.4 billion.
With a B?
With a B.
Wow.
And it involves sending a large sample retriever to Mars where it would collect the things that the rover left behind. It would put the tubes on the rocket, on a rocket. That rocket would launch into orbit and then get picked up by an orbiter, and that orbiter would then return to Earth. And so all these different things need different fuels. Like they all need independently to have a bunch of fuel to get where they need to go.
Right.
Which is why there's all these different pieces of it. Now, if that all works according to plan, it would be a very big deal. We'd be launching a rocket on another planet to get back to space, which is wild. And we'd get these pieces of Mars, our first ever like recent pieces of Mars. We have pieces of Mars that got here because like asteroids hit Mars, knocked them into space, and then eventually they fell to Earth. And we can actually identify when that happens, which is wild.
That is wild.
But these would be like, they would not have to pass through the atmosphere.
These would be fresh.
They'd be fresh.
Hype and hot, super fresh.
Yeah.
Pieces of Mars.
Fresh Mars.
And they could theoretically have fossils in them, or they could even have life in them. We don't know.
Yeah. We would be able to do a lot more science on them if they were here on Earth rather than just the chemistry that you can do on the little lab that's on the rover.
Right.
So the Independent Review Board found that those were really great and significant goals that they would love to see accomplished. And they say that the timeline and the budget are not gonna make, that's just not doable.
Oh, it's not realistic.
They think the realistic budget would be $8 to $11 billion. Ooh. And the realistic launch date would be 2040.
20 what now?
40.
I can't help but notice that all these dates being thrown around are significantly after 2027.
Look, when we made that rule, 2027 did not seem like a time that existed.
Yeah.
That wasn't a thing that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But now it looks like it will actually occur. So
can't wait to be making our hit podcast, Dear John and Hank.
And you know, I'm getting used to the idea, John.
By 2027, our podcast is going to be so bad and so short, but it's still going to, I'm still going to love it. I'm probably going to love it more than ever.
Color me surprised that Elon Musk's vision of how fast we could get to Mars was not realistic, and even maybe intentionally manipulative. And have I been lied to by Elon Musk? Is that possible? Is that a thing that could occur?
I mean, get off Twitter.
So they made a number of findings and recommendations.
Oh, good.
And NASA is now establishing its own team to look through all that report.
2040. That's going to take forever.
Yeah.
I think we could have humans there and back by 2040. And I'm the guy who bet that we couldn't do it by 2027.
It would be a lot easier to get stuff back from Mars if a human person, just put it in their backpack.
Right.
And came home.
Yeah.
Which we would do. We're not going to leave the people there. So a human mission would also be a sample return mission.
Yeah. Is that going to have to wait until 2040? Because I imagine if it takes that long to get a vial, getting a person would take even longer than 2040. Am I going to live to see? And I know we don't know. All right. So I'm just going to cut you off there, Mr. Darkness. Okay. Mr. Newly Dark. I know we don't know. Believe me, I know. Is there a chance that I will live to see a person on Mars, or was this whole thing for nothing?
There's a chance.
Did I get invested in this whole people visiting Mars for nothing?
I'd say there's a chance. I'd say it's still not a great, I'd still say it's not a certainty. It's nowhere near a certainty that you will get to see a person.
Well, of course it's not a certainty. I'm saying like, if I live to be 90,
I'm saying if you live to be 90, it's not a certainty.
Okay. That's 45 years. That gives us till 20. When?
There's practical reasons why this is hard.
I believe it. I believe it.
Yeah.
There's practical reasons why this is hard. There's a lot of confounding factors as well, Hank. Like, will humans exist? Yes.
Will we still have? will we still have will like? Will there be agriculture? Fuel?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Will there be electricity? There's a lot of questions, but I think we got a chance. I remain broadly in favor of humans, and I think we've. I think when I look at our relationship with Mars, I actually am quite inspired by what we can do. But it's a little bit of a bummer that we can't get a vial off that planet until 2040.
I mean, NASA's current stated timeline is that humans could be on Mars as early as the 2030s. And I'm like, I don't know about that.
As early as. That's great phrasing, though. Like, that's very similar to the phrasing they use around TB, where it's like, we could eliminate TB by 2030. And I'm like, yeah, we could. Anybody?
Yeah.
Anybody? Money? Money?
Yeah, no, we could go
resources,
to... Resources? Definitely.
Time?
Be on Mars in the 2030s. I agree that that is possible.
Yeah. It just, like, would take dedication. And I have to say, as much as I do want
to... It would take a lot more money than it would take to cure tuberculosis, probably.
Yeah, I think so. The number that gets thrown around is $250 billion to cure TB, to end TB.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
That's
but,
a lot. I bet it would cost more to go to Mars.
It would save 1.6 million lives a year forever, right? Like, because in some ways, like, we're still benefiting from not dying from smallpox, like... There's still people who would die from smallpox if we hadn't eliminated smallpox. So that's the great thing about getting rid of a disease is that you save lives forever, or at least you increase the length of lives forever. Mm-hmm. Turns out there actually is no saving a life. You're just delaying.
Yeah. I've heard.
Thanks for coming to our podcast. We're back, baby.
What do you say at the end of the podcast? What do we say?
Oh, boy. Hank, thanks for making a pod with me. It's been a real pleasure. Yeah, thanks to everybody for listening. Send us your emails at dearhankandjohn@gmail.com. Nope. Just hankandjohn@gmail.com.
Yep.
And thank you for all of your emails over the last 6 months that we didn't respond to. Many of them meant a great deal to us.
If you know how to get Duncan's thatch roof into a wind tunnel or have access to a jet engine, I told you his website so you can find him. I would tell you the credits of the podcast right now, but I can't because I don't know where that document is anymore.
I'm going to give it a go right now.
Okay.
Today's podcast was edited by Joseph Tuna Medish. It's produced by Rosiana Hals Rojas. Our head of social media stuff is...
Yep.
Could be Brooke Shotwell. We'll look into that. Oh,
Deboki Chakravarti is our editorial assistant?
Yes, although not on this episode.
She helped.
Oh, great.
More stuff.
Oh, great. Did she write that terrible dad joke?
No, that was me.
Oh, great.
That's always me.
Okay. Well, by the way, as we're rebuilding this thing, Hank, feel free to just let that go. Just let it sail off into the distance. If it's stressful for you, if it's fun for you, keep doing it.
Yeah.
You decide.
Okay.
As they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.